yes, he'd said. Now, it appeared I might be on the verge of joining him. Yeah, good job, Rose. I shivered, trying to imagine myself as one of them. Red rings around my pupils, tanned skin gone pale. I couldn't picture it, and I supposed I'd never have to actually see myself if it happened. Shigoi cast no reflections. It would make doing my hair a real pain in the ass. The scariest change of all would be within, the loss of my connection to my soul. Both Dimitri and Nathan had been cool and antagonistic. Even if I hadn't been around to start the fight, it probably wouldn't have taken long for them to find some other reason to turn on each other. I was combative, but it was always driven by some passion for others. Strigoi fought because they relished the bloodshed. I didn't want to be like that, seeking blood and violence because I enjoyed it. I didn't want to believe that of Dimitri either, but his actions had already branded him as a Strigoi. I also knew what he had to have been eating this whole time to survive. Strigoi could go longer without blood than Maroi, but it had been over a month since he was turned. There was no question he had fed, and Strigoi almost always kill their victims to eat. I couldn't picture that of Dimitri, not the man I'd known. I opened my eyes. The topic of feeding had brought my lunch to mind. Pizza and brownies. Two of the most perfect foods on the planet. The pizza had long gone cold during my escape efforts, but as I stared at the plate, both it and the brownie looked delicious. If the outside light was any indication, it hadn't been a full 24 hours since Dimitri had caught me, but it was getting pretty close. That was a long time to go without food, and I wanted to eat that pizza badly. Cold or not. I didn't really want to starve to death. Of course, I didn't want to become Strigoi either, but this situation was quickly running away from what I wanted. Starvation took a long time, and I suspected Dimitri was right. He'd turn me long before I had a chance to truly starve. I'd have to find some other way to die. God, not that I wanted that at all. And in the meantime, I decided I might as well keep up my strength on the feeble chance I might be able to escape. Once the decision was made, I gobbled down the food in about 3 minutes. I had no idea who Strigoi hired to do their cooking. Hell, Strigoi couldn't even eat regular food, unlike Maroi. But it was fantastic. Some wry part of me noted that I'd been given food that required no silverware. They really had thought of every possible way I might get my hands on a weapon. My mouth was full of my last giant bite of brownie when the door suddenly opened. Ina slipped deftly inside, the door shutting almost immediately. Son of a bitch! Or at least I tried to say that through my mouthful of food. While I'd been debating whether to eat or not, I should have been staking out the door. Dimitri had said Ina would check in on me. I should have been waiting to overpower her. Instead, she'd gotten in while I wasn't paying attention. Once again, I'd slipped up. Just like when she was around Dimitri and Nathan, Ina made very little eye contact. She held a pile of clothes in her arms and paused in front of me, holding them out. Uncertain, I took them from her and set them beside me on the couch. Thanks, I said. Pointing at the empty tray, she actually glanced up at me shyly, a question in her brown eyes. Seeing her straight on, I was surprised at how pretty she was. She might even have been younger than me, and I wondered how she'd ended up being forced to work here. Understanding her query, I nodded. Thanks. She picked the tray up and waited a moment. I wasn't sure why. Then it occurred to me she must be waiting to see if I wanted anything else. I was pretty sure the combination to the lock wouldn't translate very well. I shrugged and waved her off, my mind spinning as I watched her approach the door. I should wait for her to open the door and then jump her, I thought. Immediately, a gut reaction sprang up in me, hesitation at striking out at an innocent. Another thought squashed that one. It's me or her. I tensed. Ina pressed herself close to the door as she punched in the combination, effectively blocking my view. Judging by how long she was punching in numbers, the code appeared to be pretty long. The door clicked open, and I braced myself to act. Then, I decided against it at the last moment. For all I knew, there could be an army of Strigoi out there. If I was going to use Ina to escape, I probably only had one opportunity. I needed to make it count. So, instead of leaping up, I shifted slightly so that I could see beyond her. She was just as fast as before, slipping out as soon as the door unlocked. But in that moment, I caught a glimpse of a short corridor and what looked like another heavy door. Interesting. Double doors on my prison. If I did follow her, that would prevent me from making an immediate escape. She could simply wait by the other locked door, holding out until Strigoi backup showed up. That made things more difficult. But understanding the setup at least gave me a spark of hope. I just needed to figure out what to do with this information, provided I hadn't screwed myself by not acting now. For all I knew, Dimitri was about to walk in and turn me into a Strigoi. I sighed. Dimitri, Dimitri, Dimitri. Looking down, I took the time to actually see what she'd brought me. My current attire wasn't bothering me, but if I stayed here much longer, my jeans and t-shirt were going to get pretty gross. Like Tamara, someone wanted to dress me up. The clothes Ina had brought were all dresses and all in my size. A red silk sheath, a long-sleeved, form-fitting knit dress edged in satin, an empire waist, ankle-length chiffon gown. Oh, great. I'm a doll. Digging deeper into the stack, I discovered there was a few nightshirts and nightgowns tucked in there, as well as some underwear and bras. All of those were satin and silk. The most casual item in the whole lot was a forest green sweater dress, but even it was made of the softest cashmere. I held it up, trying to imagine myself making a daring escape in it. Nope. With a shake of my head, I heedlessly tossed all of the clothes onto the floor. Looked like I'd be wearing grungy clothes for a while. I paced around after that, turning over futile escape plans that I'd already spun around in my head a million times. In walking, I realized how tired I was. Aside from the blackout when Dimitri had hit me, I hadn't slept in over a day. Deciding how to handle this was like deciding how to deal with the food. Let down my guard or not? I needed strength, but each concession I made put me more at risk. At last, I gave in, and as I lay down on the massive bed, an idea suddenly occurred to me. I wasn't totally without help. If Adrian came to visit me in my sleep, I could tell him what had happened. True, I told him to stay away last time. But he'd never listened to me before. Why should this time be any different? I focused on him as hard as I could while I waited for sleep to come, as though my thoughts might act as some sort of bat signal and summon him. It didn't work. There was no visit in my dreams, and when I woke up, I was surprised at just how much that hurt me. Despite Adrian's infatuation with Avery, I couldn't help but recall how kind he'd been to Jill the last time I saw them. He was worried about Lyssa too, and he displayed none of his usual carefree bravado. He'd been serious and, well, sweet. A lump formed in my throat. Even if I had no romantic interest in him, I'd still treated him badly. I'd lost both our friendship and any chance of calling for help through him. The soft rustling of paper snapped me from my musings and I jerked upright. Someone was in the living room, his back to me as he sat on the couch, and it took me only a moment to recognize who. Dimitri. "What are you doing here?" I asked, climbing out of bed. In my groggy state, I hadn't even registered the nausea.
"Waiting for you to wake up,"
he said, not bothering to turn around. He was overly confident in my inability to inflict damage, as well he should have been.
"Sounds kind of boring."
I walked into the living room, moving myself far to the side of him and leaning against the wall. I crossed my arms over my chest, again taking comfort in that meaningless protective posture.
"Not so boring. I had company."
He glanced over at me and held up a book. A Western. I think that shocked me almost as much as his altered appearance. There was something so normal about it all. He'd loved Western novels when he was a Dampier, and I'd often teased him about wanting to be a cowboy. Somehow, I'd imagined that hobby would go away when he turned. Irrationally hopeful, I studied his face as though I might see some radical change, like maybe he'd turn back to the way he'd been while I slept. Maybe the last month and a half had been a dream.
Nope. Red eyes and a hard expression looked back at me. My hope shattered.
You slept for a long time,
he added. I dared a quick look at the window. Totally black. It was nighttime. Damn, I'd only wanted a 2-hour power nap.
And you ate.
The amusement in his voice grated at me. Yeah, well, I'm a sucker for pepperoni. What do you want? He placed a bookmark in the book and set it on the table.
To see you.
Really? I thought your only goal was to make me one of the living dead. He didn't acknowledge that, which was a bit frustrating. I hated feeling like what I had to say was being ignored. Instead, he tried to get me to sit down.
Aren't you tired of always standing?
I just woke up. Besides, if I can spend an hour tossing furniture around, a little standing isn't that big a deal. I didn't know why I was throwing out my usual witty quips. Honestly, considering the situation, I should have just ignored him. I should have stayed silent instead of playing into this game. I guess I kind of hoped that if I made the jokes I used to, I'd get some kind of response from the old Dimitri. I repressed a sigh. There I was again, forgetting Dimitri's own lessons. Strigoi were not the people they used to be.
Seating's not that big a deal either, he replied. I told you before, I'm not going to hurt you.
Hurt is kind of a subjective term. Then, in a sudden decision to seem fearless, I walked over and sat in the armchair across from him. Happy now? He tilted his head, and a few pieces of brown hair escaped from where he'd pulled it back in a small ponytail.
You still stay beautiful, even after sleeping and fighting.
His eyes flicked down to the clothes I'd tossed on the floor.
You don't like any of them?
I'm not here to play dress-up with you. Designer clothes aren't going to suddenly get me on board with joining the Strigoi Club. He gave me a long, penetrating stare.
Why don't you trust me?
I stared back. Only my stare was one of disbelief. How can you ask that? You abducted me. You kill innocent people to survive. You aren't the same.
I'm better, I told you. And as for innocent,
he shrugged.
No one's really innocent. Besides, the world is made up of predators and prey. Those who are strong conquer those who are weak. It's part of the natural order. You used to be into that, if I remember correctly.
I looked away. Back at school, my favorite non-guardian class had been biology. I'd loved reading about animal behavior, about the survival of the fittest. Dimitri had been my alpha male, the strongest of all the other competitors. It's different, I said.
But not in the way you think. Why should drinking blood be so strange to you? You've seen Moroi do it. You've let Moroi do it.
I flinched, not really wanting to dwell on how I used to let Lyssa drink for me while we lived among humans. I certainly didn't want to think about the rush of endorphins that had come with that and how I'd nearly become an addict. They don't kill.
They're missing out. It's incredible.
He breathed. He closed his eyes for a moment, then opened them.
To drink the blood of another. To watch the life fade from them and feel it pour into you. It's the greatest experience in the world.
Listening to him talk about killing others increased my nausea. It's sick and wrong. It happened so fast that I didn't have any time to react. Dimitri leapt out and grabbed me, pulling me to him and spreading me out on the couch. With his arm still wrapped around me, he positioned himself so that he was half beside me and half on top. I was too stunned to move.
No, it's not. And that's where you have to trust me. You'd love it. I want to be with you, Rose. Really be with you. We're free of the rules that others put on us. We can be together now. The strongest of the strong. Taking everything we want. We can eventually be as strong as Galena. We could have a place just like this. All our own.
While his bare skin was still cold, the press of the rest of his body against mine was warm. The red in his eyes practically gleamed while this close. And as he spoke, I saw the fangs in his mouth. I was used to seeing fangs on Moroi. but on him, it was sickening. I briefly toyed with the idea of trying to break free, but promptly dismissed it. If Dimitri wanted to hold me down, I would stay down. "I don't want any of this," I said.
"Don't you want me?"
he asked with a wicked smile.
"You wanted me once."
"No," I said, knowing I lied.
"What do you want, then? To go back to the academy? To serve Moroi, who will throw you into danger without a second thought? If you wanted that kind of life, why did you come here?"
"I came to free you."
"I am free," he responded. "And if you'd really intended to kill me, you would have."
He shifted slightly, resting his face close to my neck.
"You couldn't."
"I messed up. It won't happen again."
"Suppose that were true. Suppose you were able to kill me now. Suppose you were even able to escape. What then? Will you go back home? Will you return to Lyssa and let her continue bleeding spirits' darkness into you?"
"I don't know," I replied stiffly. And it was the truth. My plans had never gone past finding him.
"It will consume you, you know. As long as she continues to use her magic, no matter how far away you go, you'll always feel the side effects. At least as long as she's alive."
I stiffened in his arms and moved my face away. "What's that mean? Are you going to join Nathan and hunt her down?"
"What happens to her is no concern of mine," he said. "If you were awakened, Lyssa would no longer be a threat to you. You'd be free. The bond would break."
"And what would happen to her? She'd be left alone."
"Like I said, that's no concern of mine. Being with you is."
"Yeah? Well, I don't want to be with you." He turned my face toward him so that we were looking at each other again. Once more, I had that weird feeling of being with Dimitri and not with Dimitri. Love and fear. He narrowed his eyes.
"I don't believe you."
"Believe what you want. I don't want you anymore." His lips quirked into one of those scary, smirking smiles.
"You're lying. I can tell. I've always been able to."
"It's the truth. I wanted you before. I don't want you now." If I kept saying it, it would be true. He moved closer to me, and I froze. If I shifted even half an inch, our lips would touch.
"My exterior, my power, yes, that's different. Better. But otherwise, I'm the same, Rosa. My essence hasn't changed. The connection between us hasn't changed. You just can't see it yet."
"Everything's changed." With his lips so close, all I kept thinking about was that brief, passionate kiss he'd given me the last time he was here. "No. No. No. Don't think about that."
"If I'm so different, then why don't I force you into an awakening? Why am I giving you the choice?"
A snappy retort was on my lips, but then it died. That was an excellent question. Why was he giving me the choice? Strigoi didn't give their victims choices. They killed mercilessly and took what they wanted. If Dimitri truly wanted me to join him, then he should have turned me as soon as he had me. More than a day had passed, and he'd showered me with luxury. Why? If he turned me, I had no doubt that I'd become as twisted as him. It would make everything a lot simpler. He continued when I remained silent.
"And if I'm so different, then why did you kiss me back earlier?"
I still didn't know what to say, and it made his smile grow.
"No answer. You know I'm right."
His lips suddenly found mine again. I made a small sound of protest and tried vainly to escape his embrace. He was too strong. And after a moment, I didn't want to escape. That same sensation as before flooded me. His lips were cold, but the kiss burned between us. Fire and ice. And he was right. I did kiss him back. Desperately, that rational part of me screamed that this was wrong. Last time, he'd broken the kiss before too much could happen. Not this time. And as we continued kissing now, that rational voice in me grew smaller and smaller. The part of me that would always love Dimitri took over, exulting in the way his body felt against mine. The way he wound my hair around one of his hands, letting the fingers get tangled up. His other hand slid up the back of my shirt, cold against my warm skin. I pushed myself closer to him and felt the pressure of the kiss increase as his own desire picked up. Then, in the midst of it all, my tongue lightly brushed against the sharp point of one of his fangs. It was like a bucket of cold water tossed upon me. With as much strength as I could muster, I jerked my head away, pulling out of the kiss. I could only guess that his guard had been momentarily down, allowing me that small escape. My breathing was heavy, my whole body still wanting him. My mind, however, was the part of me in control, for now at least. God, what had I been doing? It's not the Dimitri you knew. It's not him. I'd been kissing a monster, but my body wasn't so sure. No, I murmured, surprised by how pathetic and pleading I sounded. No, we can't do this.
Are you sure?
He asked. His hand was still in my hair, and he forcibly turned my head so that I was face to face with him again.
You didn't seem to mind. Everything can be just like it was before. Like it was in the cabin. You certainly wanted it then.
The cabin. No, I repeated. I don't want that. He pressed his lips against my cheek, and then made a surprisingly gentle trail of kisses down to my neck. Again, I felt my body's yearning for him, and I hated myself for the weakness.
What about this?
He asked, his voice barely a whisper.
Do you want this?
What? I felt it, the sharp bite of teeth into my skin as he closed his mouth down on my neck. For half an instant, it was agonizing, painful and horrible. And then, just like that, the pain disappeared. A rush of bliss and joy poured through me. It was so sweet. I had never felt so wonderful in my life. It reminded me a little of how it had been when Lyssa drank from me. That had been amazing. But this was 10 times better. 100 times better. The rush from a Strigoi bite was greater than that of a Moroi's. It was like being in love for the first time, filled with that all-consuming joyous feeling. When he pulled away, it felt like all the happiness and wonder in the world had vanished. He ran a hand over his mouth, and I stared at him wide-eyed. My initial instinct was to ask why he'd stopped, but then, slowly, I reached inside myself to fight past the blissful days that his bite had sent me into.
Why? What?
My words slurred a little.
You said it would be my choice. It still is,
he said. His own eyes were wide, his breathing heavy too. He'd been just as affected as me.
I'm not doing this to awaken you, Rosa. A bite like this won't turn you. This, well, this is just for fun.
Then, his mouth moved back to my neck to drink again, and I lost track of the world. Chapter 20. The days after that were like a dream. In fact, I honestly can't say how many days even passed. Maybe it was 1. Maybe it was 100. I lost track of day and night, too. My time was divided into Dimitri or not Dimitri. He was my world. When he wasn't there, the moments were agony. I'd pass them as best I could, but they seemed to drag on forever. The TV was my best friend during those times. I'd lie on the couch for hours, only half following what was going on. In keeping with the rest of the suite's luxury, I had access to satellite television, which meant we were actually pulling in some American programming. Half the time, though, I wasn't sure that it really made a difference to me if the language was Russian or English. Ina continued her periodic checks on me. She brought me my meals and did my laundry. I was wearing the dresses now, and waited around in that silent way of hers to see if I needed anything else. I never did. At least not from her. I only needed Dimitri. Each time she left, Some distant part of me remembered I was supposed to do something. Follower, that was it. I'd had some plan to check out the exit and use her as a way to escape, right? Now that plan no longer held the appeal. Seemed like a lot of work. And then, finally, Dimitri would visit, and the monotony would be broken. We'd lie together on my bed, wrapped in each other's arms. We never had sex, but we'd kiss and touch and lose ourselves in the wonder of each other's bodies, sometimes with very little clothing. After a while, I found it hard to believe I'd once been afraid of his new appearance. Sure, the eyes were a bit shocking, but he was still gorgeous. Still unbelievably sexy. And after we'd talked and made out for a while, for hours sometimes, I'd let him bite me. Then I'd get that rush, that wonderful, exquisite flood of chemicals that lifted me from all my problems. Whatever doubts I'd had about God's existence vanished in those moments because surely, surely I was touching God when I lost myself in that bite. This was heaven.
"Let me see your neck," he said one day.
We were lying together as usual. I was on my side and he was snuggled up against my back, one arm draped around my waist. I rolled over and brushed my hair away from where it had fallen over my neck and cleavage. The dress I wore today was a navy halter sundress, made of some light, clingy material. "All ready?" I asked. He usually didn't bite me until the end of his visits. While part of me longed for that and waited in anticipation to feel that high again, I did kind of enjoy these moments beforehand. It was when the endorphins in my system were at their lowest, so I was able to manage some sort of conversation. We would talk about fights we'd been in, or the life he imagined for us when I was Strigoi. Nothing too sentimental, but nice nonetheless. I braced myself for the bite now, arching up in anticipation. To my surprise, he didn't lean down and sink his teeth into me. He reached into his pocket and produced a necklace. It was either white gold or platinum, I didn't have the skill to tell which, and had three dark blue sapphires the size of quarters. He'd brought me a lot of jewelry this week, and I swore each piece was more beautiful than the last. I stared in amazement at its beauty, at the way the blue stones glittered in the light. He placed the necklace against my skin and fastened it behind my neck. Running his fingers along the necklace's edges, he nodded in approval.
"Beautiful."
His fingers drifted to one of the dress's straps. He slid his hand underneath it, sending a thrill through my skin.
"It matches."
I smiled. In the old days, Dimitri had almost never gotten me gifts. He hadn't had the means, and I hadn't wanted them anyway. Now, I was continually dazzled by the presents he seemed to have at each visit. "Where'd you get it?" I asked. The metal was cool against my flushed skin, but nowhere near as cold as his fingers. He smiled slyly.
"I have my sources."
That chastising voice in my head, that sometimes managed to penetrate through the haze I lived in, noted that I was involved with some sort of vampire gangster. Its warnings were immediately squashed and sank back down into my dreamy cloud of existence. How could I be upset when the necklace was so beautiful? Something suddenly struck me as funny. "You're just like Abe."
"Who?"
"This guy I met, Abe Mazur. He's some kind of mob boss. He kept following me." Dimitri stiffened.
"Abe Mazur was following you?"
I didn't like the dark look that had suddenly fallen over his features.
"Yeah,
so?"
"Why? What did he want with you?"
"I don't know. He kept wanting to know why I was in Russia, but finally gave up and just wanted me to leave. I think somebody from home hired him to find me."
"I don't want you near Abe Mazur. He's dangerous."
Dimitri was angry, and I hated that. A moment later, that fury faded, and he ran his fingers along my arm once more, pushing the strap down further.
"Of course, people like that won't be an issue when you awaken."
Somewhere in the back of my head, I wondered if Dimitri had the answers I wanted about Abe, about what Abe did. But talking about Abe had made Dimitri upset, and I cringed at that, hastily wanting to switch topics. "What have you been doing today?" I asked, impressed at my ability to make normal small talk. Between the endorphins and him touching me, coherence was difficult.
"Errands for Galina. Dinner,"
Dinner. A victim. I frowned. The feelings that inspired in me weren't of repulsion so much as jealousy. Do you drink from them for fun? He ran his lips along my neck, teeth taunting my skin but not biting. I gasped and pressed closer to him.
No, Rosa. They're food. That's all. It's over quickly. You're the only one I take pleasure in.
I felt smug satisfaction in that, and that annoying mental voice pointed out that that was an incredibly sick and twisted view for me to have. I kind of hoped he would bite me soon. That usually shut the rational voice up. I reached up and touched his face, then ran my hand through that wonderful silky hair that I'd always loved. You keep wanting to awaken me, but we won't be able to do this anymore. Strigoi don't drink from each other, do they?
No, he agreed. But it'll be worth it. We can do so much more.
He left the so much more to my imagination, and a pleasant shiver ran through me. The kissing and blood-taking were intoxicating, but there were some days that I did want, well, more. The memories of the one time we'd made love haunted me when we were this close together, and I often longed to do it again. For whatever reason, he never pushed for sex, no matter how passionate things became. I wasn't sure if he was using that as a lure for me to turn, or if there was some incompatibility between a Strigoi and a Dampier. Could the living and the dead do that? Once I would have found the thought of sex with one of them absolutely repulsive. Now, I just didn't think about the complications so much. But although he didn't attempt sex, he would often taunt me with his caresses, touching my thighs and sternum and other dangerous places. Plus, he would remind me of what it had been like that one time, how amazing it had been, how our bodies had felt. His talk of such things was more taunting than affectionate, though. In my semi-clear moments, I honestly thought it was strange that I hadn't yet consented to becoming Strigoi. The endorphin fog made me agree to almost everything else he wanted. I'd fallen comfortably into dressing up for him, staying in my gilded prison, and accepting that he took a victim every couple days. Yet even in my most incoherent moments, even when I wanted him so badly, I couldn't agree to turning. There was some intrinsic part of me that refused to budge. Most of the time, he would shrug off my refusal, like it was a joke. But every once in a while when I declined, I'd see a spark of anger in his eyes. Those moments scared me. Here it comes, I teased. The sales pitch, eternal life, invincible, nothing to stand in our way.
It's not a joke, he said.
Oops. My flippancy had brought that hardness back to him. The desire and fondness that I had just seen now fractured into a million pieces and blew away. The hands that had just stroked me suddenly grabbed my wrists and held me in place as he leaned down.
We can't stay like these forever. You can't stay here forever.
Whoa, that voice said. Be careful. That doesn't sound good. His grip hurt, and I often wondered if that was his intent or if he just couldn't help his violence. When he finally released me, I wrapped my arm around his neck and tried to kiss him. Can't we talk about that later? Our lips met, fire blossoming between us, and urgency coursing through my body. I could tell he had a matching desire, but a few seconds later, he broke away. The cold annoyance was still on his face.
Come on, he said, pulling away from me. Let's go.
He stood up, and I stared stupidly. Where are we going?
Outside.
I sat up on the bed, dumbfounded. Out? Outside? But that's not allowed. We can't.
We can do anything I want, he snapped.
He extended his hand and helped me up. I followed him to the door. He was as skilled as Ina at blocking me from the keypad. Not that it mattered now. There was no way I could ever remember that long of a sequence anymore. The door clicked open, and he led me out. I stared in wonder, my dazed brain still trying to process this freedom. As I'd noticed that one day, the door led to a short corridor blocked by another door. It too was heavy and bore a keypad lock. Dimitri opened it, and I was willing to bet the two doors had different codes. Taking my arm, he guided me through that door and into another hallway. Despite his firm hold, I couldn't help but come to a standstill. Maybe I shouldn't have been surprised at the opulence I suddenly faced. After all, I was living in this place's penthouse suite. But the corridor leading out of my room had been stark and industrial-looking, and somehow I'd imagined the rest of the house to be equally institutional or prison-like. It wasn't. Instead, I felt like I was in some old movie, the kind where people took tea in the parlor. The plush carpet was covered by a gold-patterned runner that stretched off in both directions of the hall. Antique-looking paintings dotted the walls, showing people from ages ago in elaborate clothing that made my dresses look cheap and ordinary. The whole place was illuminated by tiny chandeliers that were spaced along the ceiling every 6 feet or so. The teardrop-shaped crystals caught the light with their facets, scattering small flecks of rainbows on the walls. I stared, enchanted by the glitter and the color, which is probably why I failed to notice one other fixture in the hall.
"What are you doing?"
The harsh sound of Nathan's voice jerked me from my crystal gazing. He'd been leaning against the wall opposite my door and straightened immediately upon seeing us. He had that same cool expression on his face that was so characteristic of Strigoi, the one I occasionally saw in Dimitri, no matter how charming and kind he seemed sometimes. Dimitri's posture turned rigid and defensive.
"I'm taking her for a walk."
He kind of sounded like he was talking about a dog, but my fear of Nathan trumped any offense I might take.
"That's against the rules," said Nathan. "Bad enough you've still got her here. Galena gave orders for you to keep her confined. We don't need any rogue Dompier running around."
Dimitri nodded toward me.
"Does she look like she's a threat?"
Nathan's eyes flicked over me. I wasn't entirely sure what he saw. I didn't think I looked that different, but a small smirk crossed his lips that promptly disappeared when he turned back to Dimitri.
"No, but I was ordered to babysit this door, and I'm not going to get in trouble for you taking a field trip."
"I'll deal with Galena. I'll tell her I overpowered you."
Dimitri gave a fang-filled grin.
"It shouldn't be that hard for her to believe."
The look Nathan gave Dimitri made me unconsciously step back until I hit the wall.
"You're so full of yourself. I didn't awaken you so that you could act like you're in charge around here. I did it so that we could use your strength and inside knowledge. You should be answering to me."
Dimitri shrugged. Taking my hand, he started to turn away.
"Not my fault if you're not strong enough to make me do it."
That was when Nathan lunged at Dimitri. Dimitri responded so quickly to the attack that I think he knew it would happen. He instantly released my hand, turned to catch hold of Nathan, and tossed the other Strigoi against the wall. Nathan immediately got up. It took more than that kind of hit to face someone like him. But Dimitri was ready. He punched Nathan in the nose. Once, twice, and then a third time, all in rapid succession. Nathan fell down, blood covering his face. Dimitri kicked him hard in the stomach and loomed over him.
"Don't try it," said Dimitri. "You'll lose."
He wiped Nathan's blood off his hand and then laced his fingers through mine again.
"I told you, I'll deal with Galena. But thanks for your concern."
Dimitri turned away again, apparently feeling there'd be no more attacks. There weren't. But as I started to follow him, I cast a quick glance over my shoulder to where Nathan sat on the floor. His eyes shot daggers at Dimitri, and I was pretty sure I'd never seen a look of such pure hatred. At least until he turned his gaze on me. I felt cold all over and stumbled to keep up with Dimitri. Nathan's voice rang out behind us.
"You're not safe! Neither of you is! She's lunch, Belikov! Lunch!"
Dimitri's hand tightened on mine, and he picked up the pace. I could feel the fury radiating off of him, and suddenly wasn't sure whom I should be more afraid of, Nathan or Dimitri. Dimitri was a badass, alive or undead. In the past, I'd seen him attack foes without fear or hesitation. He'd always been magnificent, behaving just as bravely as I'd told his family. But in all those times, he'd always had a legitimate reason for fighting, usually self-defense. His confrontation with Nathan just then had been about more, though. It had been an assertion of dominance and a chance to draw blood. Dimitri had seemed to enjoy it. What if he decided to turn on me like that? What if my constant refusal pushed him into torture, and he hurt me until I finally agreed? Nathan scares me, I said, not wanting Dimitri to know that I feared him too. I felt weak and utterly defenseless, something that didn't happen to me very often. Usually I was ready to take on any challenge, no matter how desperate.
He won't touch you, Dimitri said harshly. You have nothing to worry about.
We reached a set of stairs. After a few steps, it became clear that I wasn't going to be able to handle 4 flights. Aside from the drug stupor his bites kept me in, the frequent blood loss was weakening me and taking its toll. Without saying a word, Dimitri swept me up in his arms and carried me downstairs effortlessly, gently setting me down when we reached the staircase's bottom. The main floor of the estate had the same grand feel as the upstairs hall. The entryway had a huge vaulted ceiling with an elaborate chandelier that dwarfed the little ones I'd seen. Ornate double doors faced us, set with stained glass windows.
What also faced us was another Strigoi, a man sitting in a chair and apparently on guard duty.
Near him was a panel set into the wall with buttons and flashing lights. A modern security system set amongst all this old-world charm. His posture stiffened as we approached, and at first, I thought it was a natural bodyguard instinct, until I saw his face. It was the Strigoi I'd tortured that first night in Novosibirsk, the one I dispatched to tell Dimitri I was looking for him. His lips curled back slightly as he met my eyes.
"Rose Hathaway," said the Strigoi. "I remember your name, just like you told me."
He said no more than that, but I tightened my grip on Dimitri's hand as we passed. The Strigoi's eyes never left me until we'd stepped outside and shut the door behind us. "He wants to kill me," I told Dimitri.
"Old Strigoi want to kill you,"
Dimitri returned. "He really does. I tortured him."
"I know. He's been in disgrace ever since then and lost some of his status here."
"That doesn't make me feel any better." Dimitri seemed unconcerned.
"Marlin is no one you need to worry about. You fighting him only proved to Galina that you're a good addition around here. He's beneath you."
I didn't find that overly reassuring. I was making too many personal Strigoi enemies. But then, it wasn't like I could really expect to be making Strigoi friends. It was nighttime, of course. Dimitri wouldn't have taken me out otherwise. The foyer had made me think we were at the front of the house, but the extensive gardens that spread out around us made me wonder if we were in the back now. Or maybe the entire house was wrapped in this kind of greenery. We were surrounded in a hedge maze cut with beautiful detail. Within the maze were small courtyards decorated with fountains or statues, and everywhere were flowers and more flowers. The air was heavy with their scent, and I realized that someone had gone to an awful lot of trouble to find night-blooming ones. The only type I immediately recognized was jasmine, its long, white-flowered vines climbing up trellises and statues in the maze. We walked in silence for a bit, and I found myself lost in the romance of it all. The whole time Dimitri and I had been together at school, I'd been consumed with the fears of how we would juggle our relationship and our duty. A moment like this, walking in a garden on a spring night lit with stars, had seemed like a fantasy too crazy to even start to consider. Even without the difficulty of stairs, too much walking grew exhausting in my state. I came to a halt and sighed. "I'm tired," I said. Dimitri stopped too and helped me sit down. The grass was dry and tickly against my skin. I lay back against it, and a moment later, he joined me. I had an eerie moment of déjà vu, recalling the afternoon we'd made snow angels. "This is amazing," I said, staring up at the sky. It was clear, no clouds in sight. "What's it like for you?" "There's enough light that I can see pretty clearly, but it's still dim compared to day. Your eyes are better than mine. What do you see?"
"For me, it's as bright as day."
When I didn't respond, he added,
"It could be like that for you too."
I tried to picture that. Would the shadow seem as mysterious? with the moon and stars shine so brightly. I don't know. I kind of like the darkness.
Only because you don't know any better.
I sighed. So you keep telling me. He turned toward me and pushed the hair away from my face.
Rose, this is driving me crazy. I'm tired of this waiting. I want us to be together. Don't you like this? What we have? It could be even better.
His words sounded romantic, but not the tone. I did like this. I loved the haze I lived in. The haze in which all worries disappeared. I loved being close to him. Loved the way he kissed me and told me he wanted me. Why? I asked.
Why what?
He sounded puzzled. Something I hadn't heard yet in Ostrogoi. Why do you want me? I had no idea why I even asked that. He apparently didn't know either.
Why wouldn't I want you?
He spoke in such an obvious way, like it was the stupidest question in the world. It probably was, I realized. And yet, I'd somehow been expecting another answer. Just then, my stomach twisted. With all the time I'd spent with Dimitri, I really had managed to push the Strigoi nausea off my radar. The presence of other Strigoi increased it, though. I'd felt it around Nathan, and I felt it now. I sat up, and Dimitri did too, almost at the same time. He'd likely been alerted by his superior hearing. A dark shape loomed over us, blotting out the stars. It was a woman, and Dimitri shot up. I stayed where I was, on the ground. She was strikingly beautiful, in a hard and terrible way. Her build was similar to mine, indicating she hadn't been a Moroi when turned. Isaiah, the Strigoi who'd captured me, had been very old, and power had radiated from him. This woman hadn't been around nearly so long, but I could sense that she was older than Dimitri, and much stronger. She said something in Russian to him, and her voice was as cold as her beauty. Dimitri answered back, his tone confident, yet polite. I heard Nathan's name mentioned, a couple of times as they spoke. Dimitri reached down and helped me up, and I felt embarrassed at how often I needed his assistance, when I used to almost be a match for him.
Rose, he said, this is Galina. She's the one who has been kind enough to let you stay.
Galina's face didn't look so kind. It was devoid of all emotion, and I felt like my entire soul was exposed to her. While I was uncertain of a lot of things around here, I'd picked up enough to realize that my continual residence here was a rare and fragile thing. I swallowed.
Spasibo,
I said. I didn't know how to tell her it was nice to meet her, and honestly, I wasn't sure if it was. But I figured a simple thank you was good enough. If she'd been his former instructor and trained at a normal academy, she probably knew English and was faking it like Yeva. I had no clue why she'd do that, but if you could snap a teen Dompierre's neck, you were entitled to do whatever you wanted. Galina's expression, or lack thereof, didn't change with my thanks, and she turned her attention back to Dimitri. They conversed over me, and Dimitri gestured to me a couple of times. I recognized the word for strong. Finally, Galina issued something that sounded final and left us without any sort of goodbye. Neither Dimitri nor I moved until I felt the nausea dissipate.
Come on, he said. We should get back.
We walked back through the maze, though I had no idea how he knew where to go. It was funny. When I'd first arrived, my dream had been to get outside and escape. Now that I was here, well, it didn't seem that important. Galina's anger did.
What did she say? I asked.
She doesn't like that you're still here. She wants me to awaken you. Or kill you.
What are you gonna do? He stayed silent for a few seconds.
I'll wait a little longer. And then, I will make the choice for you.
He didn't specify which choice he'd be making, and I almost began my earlier pleas to die before becoming Strigoi. But suddenly, instead, I said, "How long?"
"Not long, Rosa. You'll need to choose." I make the right choice.
Which is? He held up his hands.
All of this. A life together.
We'd emerged from the maze. I stared at the house, which was crazy enormous when viewed from the outside, and at the beautiful gardens around us. It was like something from a dream. Beyond that, endless countryside rolled away, eventually becoming lost in the darkness and blending into the black sky, except for one tiny part that had a soft purple glow on the horizon. I frowned, studying it, then turned my attention back to Dimitri. And what then? Then I work for Galena too?
For a while.
How long is a while? We came to a stop outside the house. Dimitri looked down into my eyes, his face alight with a look that made me take a step back.
Until we kill her, Rose. Until we kill her and take all of these for ourselves.
Chapter 21. Dimitri didn't elaborate. I was too startled by his words and the rest of the night's events to even know how to begin to address them. He took me back inside, past the Strigoi on guard duty, and upstairs to my suite. Nathan was no longer outside. For a few brief moments, that nagging voice in my head spoke loudly enough to break through my addled thoughts. If I had no guard in the hall, and Ina returned soon, I had a very good chance of threatening her enough to get out of here. Admittedly, that would mean I'd have to deal with a house of God only knew how many Strigoi, but my escape odds were better in the house than in this room. Then almost as soon as those thoughts appeared, they vanished. Dimitri snaked his arm around me and pulled me to him. It had been chilly outside, and even if his body was cold, his clothes and jacket provided some warmth. I snuggled closer to him as his hands ran all over me. I thought he was going to bite me, but it was our mouths that met, hard and furious. I wrapped my fingers in his hair, trying to pull him closer to me. Meanwhile, his fingers were running against my bare leg, pushing my skirt up almost to my hip. Anticipation and eagerness lit every part of my body. I had dreamed about the cabin for so long, remembering it with so much longing. I'd never expected anything like that to happen again, but now it could, and I was astonished at how badly I wanted it. My hands moved down to his shirt, undoing all the buttons so that I could touch his chest. His skin still felt like ice, a startling contrast to the burning within me. He moved his lips from mine, down to my neck and shoulder, pushing down the dress's strap as he covered my flesh with hungry kisses. His hand was still on the side of my bare hip, and I frantically tried to pull his shirt off altogether. Suddenly, with a surprising abruptness, he jerked away and shoved me down. At first, I thought it was just more of the foreplay between us, until I realized he was purposely pushing me away.
"No," he said, voice hard. "Not yet. Not until you're awakened."
"Why?" I asked desperately. I couldn't think of anything except him touching me, and, well, another bite. "Why does it matter? Is there a reason we can't?" Until I'd come here, sex with a Strigoi had never occurred to me. Maybe it just wasn't possible. He leaned toward me, putting his lips near my ear.
"No, but it'll be so much better if you're awakened. Let me do it. Let me do it, and then we can do anything we want."
It was a bargaining chip, I realized vaguely. He wanted me. It was written all over him. But he was using the lure of sex to get me to give in. And honestly, I was this close to accepting. My body was overriding my mind, nearly. "No," I whimpered. I'm scared." That dangerous look softened, and while he didn't exactly look like the Dimitri from before, there was something a little less Strigoi about him.
"Rose, do you think I'd do anything that would hurt you?"
Somewhere, hadn't there been a discussion about how my options were to turn or die? The latter seemed like it might hurt, but I didn't mention that just now. "The bite. The turning would hurt."
"I told you. It'll be just like what we've already done. You'll enjoy it. It won't hurt. I swear it.
I looked away. Damn it. Why couldn't he still be sinister and scary? It was so much easier to put my foot down and resist. Even in the heat of passion, I was able to resist. But somehow, seeing him like this, calm and reasonable, well, it was too close to the Dimitri I'd loved. And that was hard to turn away from. For the first time, it made turning Strigoi seem not so bad. I don't know, I said lamely. He released me and sat up, frustration filling his features. It was almost a relief.
Galena's patience is running out. So is mine.
You said we still have time. I just need to think more. How long could I use that excuse? The narrowing of his eyes told me not much longer.
I have to go, he said harshly.
There would be no more touching or kissing, I could tell.
I need to deal with some things.
I'm sorry, I said, both confused and afraid. I didn't know which Dimitri I wanted. The terrifying one, the sensual one, or the almost, but still not quite, gentle one. He said nothing. Without any other warning, he leaned down and bit into the tender skin of my throat. Whatever feeble escape strategies I had were gone. I closed my eyes, nearly falling over, and only his arm wrapped firmly around me kept me upright. Just like when we kissed, his mouth was warm against my flesh, and the feel of his tongue and teeth sent electricity through me. And like that, it was over. He pulled away, licking his lips as he still continued to hold on to me. The fog was back. The world was wonderful and happy, and I was without any cares. Whatever he'd been worrying about with Nathan and Galena meant nothing to me. The fear I'd felt moments ago, my disappointment over sex, my confusion. I didn't have time to worry about any of that. Not when life was so beautiful and I loved Dimitri so much. I smiled up at him and tried to hug him again, but he was already leading me to the couch.
I'll see you later.
In a flash, he was at the door, which saddened me. I wanted him to stay. Stay forever.
Remember, I want you. And I would never let anything bad happen to you. I'll protect you. But I can't wait much longer.
With that, he left. His words made me smile more broadly. Dimitri wanted me. Vaguely, I recalled asking him outside why he wanted me. Why on earth had I asked? What answer had I wanted? Why did it matter? He wanted me. That was what counted. That thought and the wonderful endorphin rush enveloped me as I lay on the couch, and I felt drowsiness overtaking me. Walking over to the bed seemed like too much work, so I stayed where I was and just let sleep come. And, unexpectedly, I found myself in one of Adrian's dreams. I'd pretty much given up on him. After my first desperate attempts at escape in the suite, I'd finally convinced myself that Adrian wasn't coming back, that I'd send him away for good. Yet, here he was, standing right in front of me. Or, well, at least his dream version was. Often we were in the woods, or a garden. But today we stood where we'd first met, on the porch of an Idaho ski lodge. Sun shone down and mountains soared off to the side of us. I grinned broadly. Adrian! I didn't think I'd ever seen him look as surprised as he did just then, considering how mean I usually was to him. I could understand his feelings.
Hello, Rose, he said.
His voice sounded uncertain, like he was worried I might be playing a trick on him. You look good today, I told him. It was true. He wore dark jeans and a printed button-down shirt in shades of navy and turquoise that looked fantastic with his dark green eyes. Those eyes, however, looked weary, worn. That was a little odd. In these dreams, he could shape the world and even our appearances to what he wanted, with only a little effort. He could have looked perfect, but instead appeared to be reflecting real-world fatigue.
So do you.
His voice was still wary, as he eyed me from head to toe. I was still in the clingy sundress, my hair down and loose, the sapphires around my neck.
"That looks like something I'd normally dress you in. Are you asleep in that?"
"Yep." I smoothed down the dress's skirt, thinking how pretty it looked. I wondered if Dimitri had liked it. He hadn't said so specifically, but he had kept telling me I was beautiful. "I didn't think you'd come back."
"I didn't think I would either."
I looked back up at him. He wasn't like his usual self at all. "Are you trying to figure out where I am again?"
"No, I don't care about that anymore," he sighed. "The only thing I care about is that you aren't here. You have to come back, Rose."
I crossed my arms and flounced onto the porch's railing. "Adrian, I'm not ready for anything romantic."
"Not for me," he exclaimed. "For her. You have to come back for Lyssa. That's why I'm here."
Lyssa. My waking self was pumped full of endorphins, and it carried over here. I tried to remember why I should be so worried about Lyssa. Adrian took a step forward and studied me carefully.
"Yeah, you know Lyssa, your best friend, the one you're bonded to and sworn to protect."
I swung my legs back and forth. "I never made any vows."
"What the hell's the matter with you?"
I didn't like his agitated tone. It was ruining my good mood.
"What's the matter with you?"
"You aren't acting like yourself. Your aura."
He frowned, unable to continue. I laughed.
"Oh, yes. Here it comes. The magical, mystical aura. Let me guess, it's black, right?"
"No. It..."
He continued scrutinizing me for several heavy seconds. "I can barely get a fix on it.
It's all over the place."
"What's going on, Rose? What's happening in the waking world?"
"Nothing's happening," I said. "Nothing except me being happy for the first time in my life. Why are you acting weird all of a sudden? You used to be fun. Figures the first time I'm finally having a good time, you go all boring and strange."
He knelt down in front of me, no trace of humor anywhere.
"There's something wrong with you. I can't tell what."
"I told you I'm fine. Why do you have to keep coming and trying to ruin things for me?"
"True, I'd desperately wanted him to come a little while ago, but now, well, that wasn't so important. I had a good thing with Dimitri here, if only I could figure out how to solve all the not-so-good parts."
"I told you, I'm not here for me, I'm here for Lyssa."
He looked up at me, wide-eyed and earnest.
"Rose, I am begging you to come home. Lyssa needs you. I don't know what's wrong, and I don't know how to help her. No one else does either. I think only you can.
Maybe being apart is what's hurting her.
Maybe that's what's wrong with you now. Why you're acting so weird.
Come home, please. We'll heal both of you. We'll all figure it out together. She's acting so strange. She's reckless and doesn't care about anything."
I shook my head. "Being away isn't what's wrong with me. Probably not what's wrong with her either. If she's really worried about Spirit, she should go back on her meds."
"She's not worried. That's the problem, damn it!"
He stood up and began pacing.
"What's wrong with you two? Why can't either of you see there's something the matter?"
"Maybe it's not us," I said. "Maybe it's you imagining things." Adrian turned back toward me and looked me over again.
"No, it's not me."
I didn't like any of this. Not his tone, expression, or words. I'd been excited to see him, but now I resented him ruining my good mood. I didn't want to think about any of this. It was too hard.
"Look," I said. "I was happy to see you tonight, but not anymore. Not if you're going to sit and accuse me and make demands."
"I'm not trying to do that."
His voice was gentle. The anger was gone.
"The last thing I want is to make you unhappy. I care about you. I care about Lyssa, too. I want you both to be happy and live your lives like you want, but not when you're both heading down destructive paths."
He almost made sense, almost seemed reasonable and sincere. I shook my head.
"Stay out of it. I'm where I want to be, and I'm not coming back. Lyssa's on her own."
I jumped off the rail. The world swirled a little and I stumbled. Adrian caught my hand and I jerked away.
"I'm fine. You are not! Jesus Christ, I'd swear you're drunk, except...
The aura's still not right for that.
What is it?
He ran his hands through his dark hair. It was his typical sign of agitation.
I'm done here,
I said, trying to be as polite as possible. Why on earth had I wanted to see him again? It had seemed so important when I first arrived.
Send me back, please.
He opened his mouth to say something, then froze a few moments.
What's on your neck?
He reached forward, and addled or no, I managed to dodge pretty efficiently. I had no idea what he saw on my neck, and I had no interest in finding